Robert Norris just stepped in, so he is up and on his way, but he just stepped out for some reason. But he'll be right back with you for the next couple hours talking about more good information. I urge and encourage people out there to call in during his show and discuss and debate with him and share your knowledge and make announcements and do all those things that so that we can get more information out through the airways and to the people. Before I go, and oh, here he is, so I'll be gone. But I just want to say one last thing is that I don't think that we should fear the revolution. I think that we should fear the government. The revolution is something that's exciting about. The movement is something that's exciting and stimulating and empowering. And I encourage everyone to be a part of it in whatever way you can. Get involved. Adios. Take care, y'all.
Bring me to Santa Cruz. Hello?
Hello.
How you doing?
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz for the next 2 hours, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, okay. Civil Rights on the Streets. And you've been listening to Just Man Jim Costner. I'm hoping we can get Jim to come to City Hall today, because today, for the first time in goodness knows how many months, there will actually be a protest beginning, a 24-hour sleep out at City Hall, and I guess maybe more than 24 hours. The individuals who are organizing this sleep out, led by Dan Hopkins, one of the River Street refugees, one of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter residents, has declared he's going to continue sleeping there until there's a change in the sleeping ban law and an emergency campground. So who knows? Maybe all you old protesters, all you old resistors, all you civil rights advocates who've been kind of waiting for something to support that's happening downtown around the issues of homelessness and civil rights, this could be your issue. City Hall, 809 Center Street, starting today, probably around noon, although they may take a little longer.
And,
yeah, starting at noon and going on until the cows come home. Namely, I guess some people have declared they're going to be arrested and returned, as happened 6 years ago when there was a homeless table protest in front of the post office, which actually started at City Hall. This will be at City Hall.
City Hall today.
Well, it'll be in the afternoon. You could come as early as 12 or as late as 6. The point is, these folks intend to stay overnight. Bring your sleeping bags, bring your cameras, bring your tape recorders. It's going to be a sleep out at City Hall.
All right, I'll be there tonight.
All right.
I'll be there, I promise.
Hey, we have a promise. We have one commitment from Just Man Jim here. We'll see if that man keeps his word. So, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772, 96.3 FM. Oh, of course. They'll be sleeping out, and you can come at midnight.
I'll come by and sleep out after work. Then.
All right. This man, the working man will be coming down. Can you imagine? Well, thank you, Jim. All right. Let's bounce right into Bathrop Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor. And let's begin with a little singing from that old, actually he's not so old, but he's a true and tried folk singer, Mark Levy.
Well, now you heard about Dallas and Fantasy Isle, American dream, affluent style. But Robin Leach might be surprised by what I see before my eyes, watching lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me. Change, I need a bite just to survive's an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. thousand children died, while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals, while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats. Street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup line kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim, while the people's future's looking grim on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon.
Santa Cruz City Council, members of the public, my name is Robert Norris. Santa Cruz City needs a campground. It had one, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, until its managers, the monopoly service providers in town, closed it down last December. These boys call themselves the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, CCH. With council members Rotkin and Kennedy in their corner, it's been smooth sailing. Violate a publicly witnessed November 29th contract with the residents after weeks of negotiation? No problem. If you've got the support of self-appointed city council constables, Slam Dunk Scott and Mellifluous Mike, who took it upon themselves to bully and threaten campers at Coral Street, turning them into refugees or armory inmates. Destroy the health and safety of the homeless by dispersing a viable campground community at Christmas? Why not? Locate a $1.3 million 40-person trailer project on the property that previously served hundreds in that free campground, leaving homeless people with no legal alternatives. Tough luck, homeless. Today, the Rotkin-Kennedy subcommittee that was supposed to scrutinize CCH's ridiculous, bloated, trailers not trolls proposal gave it the green light for funding. Remember, back in January, Rotkin-Kennedy would not even allow $5,000 of that $47,000 to be set aside for the SOS emergency campground proposal. Every homeless person and advocate at the Rotkin-Kennedy meeting today opposed the trailer project, and there were nine of us. Every homeless person I've ever spoken to opposes the trailer project when it is explained to them what it replaces. Who supports it? CCH's paid employees and their pals, Rotkin and Kennedy. So this Council CCH Alliance first destroys a campground and then funds a $1 million case-managed trailer park in its place, where residents will not even have the right to have private visitors. Does something smell here? Can we say fund magnet for SSI checks? Does the word poverty pimp apply here? CCH poverty pimps Darling and Marceau earn their salaries off of money that should be going to homeless people. They have broken their word to and abused homeless people. They feel they are untouchable. If this council and this community follows the direction of Rotkin and Kennedy, perhaps they are. Tonight, camper Dan Hopkins stands against the poverty pimps and their political allies. He warns us to set our sights on an emergency campground on March 15th when the Winter Armory program ends. It's time for those on the council who still can to vote their conscience, even if it be a lone vote. It's time for the rest of us to raise our voices to make such a noise that the rest of the council will have no peace until it guarantees peace and justice for the homeless it has abandoned. Some council members dispute what I say. Indeed, Scott Kennedy has denounced me as a liar earlier today in a public forum. I invite him to back up his charges in a free and public debate on Free Radio Santa Cruz if he has the resolve. The choice is his. Thank you.
We don't need to support the lowest common denominator of person or courses or most grotesque or deformed spirit.
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
What have you.
You are listening to...
But we do need a welfare system that is a real safety net that does provide
last Tuesday, public input
minimum below which people are not permitted by their other fellows to fall. And that needs to probably be a federal shelter system run at least as well as a federal prison system. I understand that to house 500 people in this jail over here costs $10 million, so you figure out, and it's $40,000 apiece for 250 of them, or $10 million is spent in total law enforcement just for on 250 addicts, cocaine addicts, heroin addicts, people who in despair are trying to mediate their problem using powerful mind altering substances, which for some reason are illegal. To use, it shouldn't be illegal to use. The addict should not be persecuted for being addicted to a substance which police are have the legal right to behave like dealers that attempts to cross the line or blur the line between what the police are doing. Anyway, it's just incredibly wasteful to spend $40,000 per person on addiction when the problem should be solved medically. If we have to lock people up at the rate of $25,000 to $40,000 because they're dangerous, they commit violent crimes, then we should at least allow a minimum, maybe a bunk with 100 other people in a warehouse with a heater, say that $818,000 warehouse we've got, to stay in that. And it should be national policy. There shouldn't be any doubt about this. Thank you.
You are tuned to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Civil Rights for the Poor for the next 2 hours, and the call-in number in case you want to comment on any of these ongoing events or the planned sleep out at City Hall, which is slated to begin today, tonight, possibly as early as noon, possibly as late as 6 or 7, depending on when campers, River Street refugees forced out of the Henry Cowell situation for both lack of funding and also under park regulations, a kind of combination of the two or one or the other, certainly both within the next week, will be showing up at City Hall, not as an official organization, but essentially under the inspiration of Daniel Hopkins and other campers who have decided that they've had enough runarounds, enough abuse from City Council and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, campers who are looking forward to the interests of the entire homeless community who will be faced with an increased shelter crisis on March 15th when the Winter Armory shelter closes for the winter and the City Council has zero plans for any kind of emergency shelter at that time. We hear kind of occasional babbling from Celia Scott about a possible reform of the sleeping ban or a possible opening up of a parking garage, or maybe looking into De La Vega Park, or maybe vouchers, and I've also heard some proposal about a pavilion run by our friends, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless at Holy Cross Church, for 75 people. But none of this has been released to us, none of this has been committed. None of this is clear that it's going to happen. What is clear is the sleeping ban is still being enforced. I've been at the Food Not Bombs meeting on Monday afternoon. No, actually, it was Monday evening. Too much coffee this morning. Maybe not enough. I received reports of camping tickets, tickets for sleeping tickets within the last 2 weeks. So the authorities are busy harassing the homeless. The law is in full force. And today at City Hall, tonight at City Hall, a sleep-out reaction begins, which hopefully will change the course of that law, which will force authorities to establish an open-air shelter, a campground for the homeless, and which I invite every person listening to this broadcast to join. If not overnight, come on down during the day, offer your support, spend an hour there, bring a camera, bring some videotape, bring some food, bring something to drink, bring some coffee. Call up City Council at 429-3550 and tell them that you fully support this sleep out and will be essentially there at times during the day to help the people continue to protest the City Hall indifference and collusion with CCH authorities, that Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the group that is setting up the $1.3 million trailer project and destroying the open-air campground area. This kind of fight, this kind of high-profile, what will turn out probably to be civil disobedience, is what overturned the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara in 1986. And today we're going to have an interview with Jane Hagstrom, who was the coordinator of the homeless coalition down there during those heady days in the mid-80s when Mitch Snyder and Bob Hansen and Nancy McCready, names that are sort of unfamiliar to many of us in Santa Cruz, but quite familiar to those in Santa Barbara, were able to mobilize the support of the liberal, caring community and end the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara for about 3 years until it was, by judicial fiat, brought back in 1989. And indeed, there was a large sleep out at City Hall, and that's the subject of the interview I have today with Jane Hagstrom. In 1990, this sleep out happened as a continued protest. It was not as successful as it could have been, but it was empowering. It was a positive thing. It happened at the same time as our Santa Cruz sleep out in front of the post office downtown, the main post office, which began at City Hall in Santa Cruz right after the earthquake in protest of Mayor Marty Wormhout's intoxicated exclusion of people from sleeping in front of a full civic auditorium homeless shelter right after the earthquake. She was making distinctions between the pre- and post-earthquake homeless and using the police to disperse the pre-earthquake homeless who had the temerity to pitch their tents and have sleeping bags right outside the civic auditorium because, as the directors of that civic auditorium told everyone, we are closed, we are full, we have to put people outside. Too bad, said Mayor Wormhout, too bad, and they sent in the police under Jim Howes and other officers to disperse those people, to arrest them, and Helen Langley and her dog went to jail, as well as Judith Beinert, Linda Edwards, and numerous other homeless activists. That began the City Hall protests of 1989, which led to an 8.5-month vigil in front of the post office, and it was that kind of pressure that eventually got us the campground that we had for 2 years in back of River Street, that kind of pressure which showed the city that if they do not open up release valves, if they do not open up some kind of emergency areas, then the people that whose basic right to sleep are being denied will show up downtown. And I believe those of us who supported that vigil, those of us who went to jail for it, and I was one of those people, paved the way for the services we have. We all know the free meal was created by protest, and same Mayor Marty Wormhout, now our distinguished supervisor, whose positions I agree with on the curfew, was arresting us in the dozens for giving out food at the town clock. And we had to do that for 6 months before we could get the city to fund the free meal program, which originated as Calamity's Cupboard and later became Karen Gillette's free meal. We had to return to the streets in 1990 to get a certified kitchen for the free meal because the city and the county had been dragging its heels for 6 months. And we did Kitchen Quest, as we called it, occupying the Board of Supervisors, going to occupy the Civic Auditorium kitchen, doing protests at the food pavilion when that was in operation, getting arrested. That's what it took to get the message to the city authorities, to the county authorities, to the community, that there really was a problem that couldn't be swept under the rug by sweet talk, nice commissions, and schmoozing between well-intentioned liberals and city council members that was leading nowhere. Apropos of that, Save Our Shelter, which is a group that sort of coalesced last fall around the campground, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter campground, and negotiated with the managers of that campground, who included Daryl Darling and Palmer Sowe. Darling is actually the head of the subsequent community house project, but he was deeply involved with the Citizens Committee, and he was one of their two paid employees, along with Palmer Sowe, $28,000 a year, to supervise, tame, and domesticate homeless people, keep them in line, smile at them, sweet-talk them, and then kick them out, which is what the two of those two men did in December of 1995 in violation of a specific promise, a specific contract, that there would be no such eviction until 10 days after permits were granted, which was last Tuesday, folks. So theoretically, there should be people with their tents still on that property, and there aren't, as a consequence of Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau, and, of course, able help from their police friends on the city council, Scott Kennedy and Mike Rotkin, as I mentioned in the speech you heard at the beginning of this hour, which was a speech at city council I made at the 7 o'clock session of city council last Tuesday called Politicians and Poverty Pimps. If you want a copy of that speech, give me a call at 423-HUFF. Be happy to get you one way or another. We also many other articulate and eloquent and educational things were said at that meeting, although the mayor was threatening to arrest some of us. He didn't like the way they were being said, and he didn't like the tone of voice that one particular speaker, Patrick Lancelin, was using, and we're going to be playing that speech later in the hour. Nonetheless, these things are coming out, and indeed, the appeal, and that was really the essence of the Tuesday meeting, the appeal of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's permit to have a trailer project on that site, a 20 to 40 person trailer project, very closely monitored, visitors only for 2 hours, no smoking, no drinking, no alcohol, supposed to be completely sober and drug-free, right next to services, of course, that are filled with alcohol and drugs, because that's a part of the homeless situation, as well as everything else. Incredible restrictions, a curfew for the people who use those facilities. Dan challenged that permit on the basis of incredible noise from the freeway, the rebar factory, and the cement factory that made sleeping, he could testify personally, very difficult in that area. Toxic in the soil in reports that have been not made or not really attended to. Celia Scott initially asked for a toxic report in response to Dan Hopkins' request and then backed off 180 degrees when her master, Mike Rotkin, spoke. When he spoke, she responded, you know, her master's voice. Rotkin rules the roost, and he said that's going to be a little too expensive, and everybody else kind of quieted down on the toxic soils survey. So now CCH will not have to do a survey for the trailers for toxic soil. Instead, they will just recommend that nothing be grown there. So don't try growing those strange carrots, or you may end up, in the emergency room after you take a quick bite, that or your pet rabbit. Also, there was a real concerns about noise there that Dan Hopkins raised. And indeed, these were seriously discussed initially by city council members, including Jane Yokoyama, who apparently has lived in modular housing, the kinds of trailers that are being donated by Stanford for this so-called community house project. She said that, you know, the walls are thin, that it can be really quite a grating experience. And originally, the community house required a permit, that's back in 1991, for noise, because they were even going to build a structure that was set back from the highway and would be less vulnerable to noise. Well, in this latest incarnation of CCH's money-grabbing project, and that's what it is, they're trying to get hundreds of thousands of dollars from different federal agencies in what is the latest craze of case-managed, well-policed, insulated programs that largely don't work. Largely don't work, unfortunately. It's not real transitional housing in the sense of giving people the liberty that they require and providing affordable housing support. No, it's a program that hires a bunch of middle-class service providers and provides jobs for people who don't really, in terms of comparative need, if you're talking about homeless needs, this isn't the population we should be serving. We should be concerned about the broad majority of homeless people. But no, these guys are looking for the bucks under the leadership of the very Reverend Dr. Paul Lee, PhD, who heads the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. It's money they're looking for. and that's federal grants and city waivers, and of course they're going on a big fundraising drive soon for the Community House project. You know, one of my problems is I get so wrapped up in this, I tend to jump around and lose my original point, which I think had to do something to do with the sleepout, the City Hall sleepout, which is happening today, which I guess Dan Hopkins and other campers, not as an official organization of River Street Refugees, but as individuals and other individuals, have decided to support and begin today. And Dan apparently is not entirely well. Last I saw him, he had a fever, but he said he would, I encouraged him to put off this protest, but he said, no, I'm not going to put off the protest. This has to be done, and it has to be done now. Other individuals like Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, I understand Barbara Riverwoman was supported once the protest was announced. I don't know what Sherry's response has been. These are two activists who have been concerned and meeting with city council members and recently formed, as I was mentioning earlier, an SOS Save Our Shelters meeting. Happened on Wednesday night, and more about that in a moment. Initially, there has been no plans for protests from the people who supposedly have taken a high-profile lead in statements to the press about the need for an emergency campground. I'm talking about Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable. They have got a lot of good ideas and have been talking earnestly with council members. My criticism of what they've been doing, and I'm quite forthright about it, and I don't regard this as divisive, but I regard this as educational, is that they have not consulted in any sense in terms of a mandate campers or the larger homeless community in what they're doing, which is they have a perfect right to proceed on their own. I proceed on my own largely with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but I don't kind of make a pious stand as Sherry Connable does, as representing numbers of homeless people or organizations that I don't have meetings of. Save Our Shelters hasn't met since December. And all the meetings that she and Barbara have had, or met most of them, with city council members have been private. They've selected the people that they brought to their meetings. That happened as recently as yesterday. There was a meeting with, it was yesterday. They met with Celia Scott and Catherine Byers to talk about this their campground proposal. Did they invite members of Save Our Shelters to come? Did they invite homeless people to come? Did they invite HUF activists to come, at least to witness, to see that there was no sellout happening, to be a sort of a source of some kind of input? No way. Sherry Connable's modus operandi since 1990 in the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep has been secret, select, elitist meetings. She evicted people from her meetings of the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep repeatedly after moving those meetings from public ground to her house so as to make sure that radicals like myself, Jane Embler, and Linda Edwards were not permitted in the meetings. Sherry wants to run this. Some suggest that maybe she's looking for some kind of position here. Indeed, she was paid by the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep to do her work, and this is serious criticism of what she does. It's not an attempt to dismiss everything she does. She's an eloquent speaker. She has a lot on the ball on the issues, and she has a deep sense of compassion. But her method of proceeding, which is to exclude activists, exclude those who are on the radical side of this issue, and then downgrade, dismiss, and attack them, which is what she and both Barbara Riverwoman to some extent have done. Barbara Riverwoman wrote a long letter to Scott Kennedy distancing herself from myself and Chris Brazda. And I don't agree with everything Chris Brazda does and says. Crossroads Chris, as I call him. You've heard him on the air here. He's sometimes too radical for me. I mean, this guy is way out there. But, if they're about to arrest him at a meeting he has a right to be in, and if he's not being threatening and abusive, I'm with him, you know. Sherry Connable had nothing to say when they were about to arrest me at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting, except for I hear support for that position. And she scurried to distance herself from those of us who are trying to bring the issue to the public and to attack the Citizens Committee, because she felt it was politically appropriate to be friends with the Citizens Committee and friends with the City Council. Well, can't agree with that, and I can't agree with the policy of holding closed sessions where you do not invite people to the negotiating meetings with the bigwigs. If you aren't doing that, then you are taking an elitist position, which I do not support, and that is unfortunately how I feel about it. Naturally, everyone, including Sherry, including Barbara, including Scott Kennedy, you know, for heaven's sake, even though he was ranting at me as being a liar and a coward after the city council meeting, and something I wished I'd had tape for, oh boy, you would have heard quite a dialogue outside that city council. It was more of a screaming match, but it was, in a way, educational to show you the kind of real feelings that are happening underneath these issues. Everybody is invited to this sleep out, and you should bring as many people as you can. I'm sure Scott Kennedy will be sniffing around trying to co-opt things, and so will Mayor Mike Rotkin. After all, their offices will be like 30 feet from the center of the sleep out and at City Hall, which I guess is going to be, I'll be on the either in front of City Hall, or it'll be in the under the corridors of the City Hall near the council chambers. I remind you again, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and today is March 1st, 1996. This is the first broadcast in March. We broadcast twice a week, Mondays and Fridays, and we take guests and we take call-ins, and the call-in number is 427-3772. If you have something you want to add, any reports you want to acquaint our listeners with, if you're a homeless person and have been harassed or abused, if you have any updates on what's been happening in this part of the world or another, we want to hear from you. And indeed, it looks like we're going to get some kind of incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Robert, hi. Bob LaMonica here.
Ah, Bob LaMonica. How you doing, Bob?
Well, good. I have an important announcement, and I want to make it on your show.
In fact,
there'll be a brief press release that'll go out this afternoon. But the 96 Danner recall campaign kickoff demonstration, 5 p.m. Wednesday, March 6th, in front of the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Wow.
Okay, the paperwork was cleared. The last stage was for the county clerk to clear the petition for the 96 recall. That happened yesterday, so we've been in limbo for quite a while on this, although there's been a lot of work done.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
There's been a lot of work done to raise this issue to the political surface where it needs to be, because the issue of Art Danner takes in four of the presiding boards of supervisors in the county, and three of them are running for political office. Jan Butz, Walt Simons, and Fred Keeley, and first and foremost must be for them to justify their vote on December 6th of 94 and April 4th of 95 regarding the district attorney directing time cards to be falsified overlapping the June 94 election.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact of the matter is that was hush money, plain and simple, and all the procedural facades they want to lay claim to are just that. This is a cover-up. The DA directed time cards be falsified overlapping the June election. We got to keep that in context. I want to give the 1-2 punch real briefly. The other aspect that's easy to communicate about Mr. Danner, which makes it clear that the individual should be removed from office, any office, let alone the district attorney, with the power to prosecute. In 1987, June 9th of 1987, Mr. Danner, who was 8.5 years DA at the time, was involved in a car wreck. The victim, whose teeth were broken, Sandra Larson, ended up in the hospital. Her blood is tested in the hospital. Her blood is run through all the tests for drugs and alcohol, comes up negative. The DA, who is the at-fault drinking driver, is never blood tested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to what degree of a double standard do people want to live with in this community? You know, I've been asked many times, you know, this is old news, this Sandra Larson drunken car wreck where the DA's gets away with not getting a blood test, and they try to nail the victim. I mean, plan A, as far as I can figure out, and I don't think it's stretching the logic at all. The victim's blood is tested in the hospital, and the at-fault driver's is not. People say it's old news. I say Adolf Eichmann was tried in the 1960s for war crimes. Was that old news, or was that unfinished business?
Well, listen, that's quite interesting news, Bob, although you've been kind of leading up to this for a while, and after your 10,000 signature effort in the fall, you should have quite a base to work from.
Absolutely, and all that work was not in vain. We did a lot of work. We laid the groundwork for what will be a successful removal of a five-term district attorney. It's time that the community rose to the occasion, realized that abuse of power is a reality. Now, this DA recall has direct and symbolic importance. If there ever were a public official that was fit for recall, it's Art Danner.
Yeah, actually, I talked to Danner a couple weeks ago, as I've informed people on the air about the curfew issue. Actually, he talked to me, and we've been trying to get him on the air to debate the curfew, and that hasn't happened so far. In fact, I have my doubts that it will ever happen. Curfew, as we know, is a done deal. It happened on Tuesday, and I just recently, I was interviewed last night by a UCSC student who was kind of doing research on this, and that's really another issue that perhaps, well, I don't know how you stand on the curfew, Bob, but to me it's been an important issue, and I think it'll become increasingly important as we see how it affects homeless people in the county. The whole homeless situation as far as the district attorney office goes is another one which I think we can profitably explore here in terms of deciding whether our listeners want to support your recall of Art Danner.
Campaign kickoff demonstration, 5 p.m. Wednesday, March 6th, in front of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. One of the dilemmas last year was the effect of suppression. All right, the Santa Cruz Sentinel has a lot of power in this community. They have the power to credit and discredit political action.
And ignore it.
All we're asking for is the right for the people to know. And the fact of the matter is, the DA directed time cards to be falsified overlapping the June 94 election. The victim of the DA's drunken car wreck was blood tested, and he wasn't. Those are the facts.
And indeed, this issue, as private citizens have attempted to bring this up legally, of course, as you mentioned before, the Board of Supervisors, which covered it up, and then, of course, Attorney Ed Frye has been trying to get this into court. He actually had a trial scheduled for our dinner for January, and then Art's able lawyers and his political pals were able to stall the whole thing and blitz Ed Frye with legal paper, and he's currently struggling, I guess, in district court in San Jose to get some kind of resolution so this matter sees the light of day for a jury trial here in Santa Cruz.
Of course, so we're going to try to suppress this thing until Danner's out of office. Well, and that is the exact wrong approach. Last thing I'd like to say, most of us would look back on the Nixon resignation and say that it had to happen. For the good of the country, it would have made a shambles of our ideology. The fact of the matter was it became unsuppressibly clear that Nixon had participated in the cover-up of a burglary. You do not allow him to finish out his term.
Right. Well, let's see what you can do in this recall, and I hope to hear more from you. And I want to appreciate your breaking of the story first here on Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside.
You bet. One last time.
Yes.
96 Danner recall, campaign kickoff demonstration, 5 p.m. Wednesday, March 6th. Front of the Santa Cruz Center.
Anybody who wants to support you can call
457-2670.
Thank you, Bob Monica.
Thank you.
That was battling Bob LaMonica as I continue to annoy him by calling him, but I do regard him as a fighter, and he's been fighting and he keeps on fighting, and I'm glad he does. What we've got now is an interview. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course, and this is a show that'll be going on for the next hour and a half. So if anything strikes you that you agree with, strongly disagree with, want to add information to, or have questions about, give me a call at 427-3772. This morning I was in contact with Bob Campbell. And who is Bob Campbell? Bob Campbell is a social service provider for quite a period of time. Actually, we have a surprise guest has just showed up in the studio. And that is the notorious Sharif with his coffee in hand. Sharif has taken a long time coming to the air. We're going to play that Bob Campbell interview as soon as we finish speaking with Sharif.
Good to see you, Rob.
Hey, good to see you, Sharif.
All right.
All right. I don't want you to get my cold. Let me see if I can get a second mic going here.
Okay.
Is this mic working? Yes. Looks like it's working as well. So you can use. I'll use this mic. You use that mic, and you have to get real close to the
mic.
Here? Yeah.
Okay.
Get real close to the mic.
Just
sort of.
Take my jacket.
He's while Sharif strips for action here to talk about his issue, which actually we've referred to kind of obliquely in the past, what I'd like to do is give him a chance to summarize what he's here for, what he wants to kind of reveal to our audience, to you today, and then he will no doubt take questions on the phone if people want to call in.
That's fine.
So come a little closer, Sharif.
Okay.
Just kind of make it a joint distance from the mic,
okay.
As Ed Frye would say.
Okay.
And well, tell me, Sharif, what brings you to our studio today?
Okay, I'm in the studio because I think that it's important for the people of Santa Cruz, all people, to know just some of the things that are happening in Santa Cruz to people, who they don't talk to or who they don't see every day. So I want to like sort of inform people of just some of the things that are happening in Santa Cruz right under their nose. Some people are probably aware of some of the things that are going on, but for the people who aren't aware, I want to inform them about some of the things that are happening to as far as some of the racial incidents that have happened to me personally and some of my friends. And
Yes.
Last I checked. I'm a darkie.
Indeed. And so how long you lived in Santa Cruz?
Off and on since 1980. I'm an infamous street musician. If anybody remembers Sharif on the Mall, I played guitar for a long time, and I was fairly successful. I stopped in about 1992. Okay.
And what happened recently that you think is of importance to our listeners?
Okay. Actually, I've been away for a few years, and I just returned to Santa Cruz. I was in Colorado, and I wasn't aware of the things that have changed, but I got back in November, and November the 16th, I was on the mall, and I wanted some herb. You know, I smoke herb. It's medicine. And I approached a guy, and he happened to be white, and he said he could sell me $10 worth of marijuana, and another guy came with him. So we walked a block or two off the mall, and I even smoked with him after I bought it, so the story is bizarre. Anyway, after we smoked, they started saying things to me like, you fucking niggers, you know, niggers, just repeating words. I said something that they didn't like, and then, you know, their response was, you fucking niggers, and they just kept chanting it. I tried to get them to, you know, to say, look, you know, you can say anything you want to me, but don't use that, and instead, they just kept chanting, you fucking niggers, get used to it. Anyway, they tried to, like, jump me, like, just two on one. It was two of them. And fist fight, they couldn't take me. So one of them, actually both of them, they somehow found some bricks and they threw it at me. And one hit me in the back of the head, and I ended up in the hospital. I had what's called an arterial laceration. And, you know, I mean, I could have died. I'm fine now, but I could have damn near bled to that death, because anybody knows what an arterial laceration is. I mean, an artery was lacerated. So, and the thing is, that's the worst incident, but that's not the first. I've been called nigger in this town more times than I am old, and I'm 42. And I'm from back east, so I'm used to racism. But the racism here is like, it comes out of the closet. No, people don't walk around blatantly all the time, but it's like, when you least expect it, and you're by yourself, and you're black, it comes. And then I tell some of my friends, you know, who happen to be white, and they're like, no, this doesn't happen here. And it's like, my God, you know, I'm getting my ass kicked sometime, and people are telling me it's not racist here. So it's like a man telling a woman that there's no rape, you know, because he doesn't see it. But I forgive people for ignorance, you know, I'm not judging people. But so I'm here, you know, informing people, if they don't know, that we need to work on the problems of race. You know, I hold no grudge against you know, white people as a whole, you know, for what's done to black people. I deal with individual, and I appeal to all white people who are into harmony, who are into bringing everybody together and collectively, in collective spirit, for one goal, one love, one people, one destiny. You know, to don't let these things go unchecked around you. I mean, you don't have to risk your life, but, you know, say something, yell if you see things happen. I mean, we need to come together on these issues, because like Malcolm said, or was it Malcolm? Well, Malcolm said, you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And I say, which someone else said, if I'm not free, then you're not free. So I want us all to be free, and, you know, I point no fingers at no one, because I have a lot of beautiful friends in this town, and I love this town dearly. So I want to just make sure people know that, that I love this town, but I'm appealing to people, the good folks of Santa Cruz, you know, who really care. And I just want you to be aware of these things, and maybe one day we'll get some sort of rally together, or march, maybe to march against racism and to march for healing and racial harmony and peace between all people. And we need a day of healing. You know, we have so many days of getting in people's faces and yelling, but I would like to organize a day of healing where everybody came together who believed in one love.
You know, Sharif, there may be a kind of new center of dialogue happening if the Sleep Out at City Hall, which is planned for tonight by some of the River Street refugees and by some supporters of the homeless, begins to happen. And I would encourage you to kind of look in on that City Hall Sleep Out in the next few days, and possibly we could organize such actions, days of healing, days of understanding,
yes,
around the people who,
yes,
are being harassed by the City,
yes,
Council and the,
yes,
Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Yes, yes, yes. I will check that, because a day of healing, a day of peace, where there's no, you know, shouting against the establishment necessarily, where we just like coming together and loving each other, because we have a lot of beautiful brothers and sisters in Santa Cruz that have a lot of knowledge of healing and taking care of people. So I want to connect with that spirit, and I think that the power of light is greater than the power of darkness. So, I mean, the power of darkness is out there, and, you know, but I know that their time is just about up.
And maybe the power of blackness and the power of justice can also come in here. You know, we're talking about the rights of people to organize themselves. I don't know about the black community here in Santa Cruz. Have they gotten together much? Has the NAACP
I think that NAACP in Santa Cruz is very weak. They will stand up for certain issues, but just the regular Joe on the street, a lot of times, they're not standing up for them. So, and the black community in Santa Cruz used to be a little more organized, but the cops, pretty much, we used to hang at Loud and Nelson, and it wasn't all bad at Loud and Nelson. It has a bad reputation. But that's where a lot of us, you know, black folk and white folk, I mean, just a lot of people got together, and we played basketball. There was recreational things happening, but it's a different city since I've come back, you know, and it's only been a couple of years. I just was just traveling, but yeah, the black community is not organized, and I want to connect everybody, you know, black, white, pink, and green, male, female, young and old, him, her, us, we. I mean, you know, I just want everybody, and because unity is important, especially in these trying times that we're living in. You know, we need to know who's on our side.
Some of the healing can only happen once the realities of the problems are exposed. So, for instance,
do we have a mic here?
So, for instance, what we need is if you're a black or a person of color, and you've been hassled or if you've been discriminated against here in Santa Cruz, that needs to be made public. You know, call 427-3772. Let's talk about it. If you feel you can take that risk publicly and do that. Because that's the kind of information that we need. I mean, there is a so-called progressive city council which has presumably a commitment to racial justice, to social justice. They, you know, make much of their concern about justice for the homeless, and we need to make sure that they carry through on their commitment so that it isn't just empty rhetoric and empty air. And the way to do that is to bring specific cases up for consideration. Now, there's recently been a lot in the papers about disparity of sentencing between crack and and powder cocaine.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. There are large disparities in the sentencing laws for crack cocaine and just powder cocaine. And the powder cocaine, we obviously know is more expensive. We know what type of people economically use that and racially. And then the crack cocaine, we know there's a heavier sentence. Essentially, the thing is, there's more time giving. So, like, if you come in with the same amount of crack as you have cocaine, why? And so they need to change that. A black man makes 72 cents to a white man's dollar. That's today. Blacks and whites use drugs at the same rate of use today, but a black man is four times likely to be arrested for drugs, even though blacks and whites use drugs at the same rate of use. Also, a black man gets 10% more jail time than a white guy for the same crime. I'm writing a book. I'm trying to get it published. It's called Racism America Style, A Nation in Denial of Organized Inequality.
Yeah, how can people get in touch with you if they want to their local experiences, Sharif?
Through you.
Then you should give a call to 423-HUFF if you have information you want to contribute to Sharif's book, which, you know, I can pass on to him, and he will hopefully get in touch with me. That's 423-HUFF. If you've been discriminated against or if you have information you think might be helpful, particularly, I think, I guess you're covering the national angle, but I'm interested also in the local angle. What's your sense about the local angle? Do most black people in the area here have jail records, most black men, because of this disparity?
If one black man commits a crime in Santa Cruz, and it doesn't even have to be a felony, their cops will stop every black man that they see and question him, because that's happened to me and it's happened to many other black males.
When's the last time this happened, Sharif?
There was one incident. My friend was stopped because, I don't want to give out a name, but he was stopped because it was just, like I say, a month or two ago. I get subtle things against me, like the cops, for instance. Like yesterday, I had just bought a burrito at the burrito place at the bus station, and I went with my friend to the river to eat it, and the cop was driving down the Soquel over the bridge, and he happened to look over and see that we were at the river, and I said to myself, he's going to ride all the way down, and he's going to turn around and come around, he's going to come down by the river just because I'm here and I'm black, and he wants to check me out, and he did. He rode all the way across the bridge, you know, then made that right turn to come onto the mall, I mean not the mall, to come on the front street, and then he came down by the river. and rode and checked me out, and I was looking there waiting for him with my all arms folded like, yeah, hi, how are you? And then when he was riding away, he looked in his mirror, his rearview mirror, and I looked at him like, hi.
Yeah. You know. So obviously he was very concerned about your situation,
yeah,
right there, Sheree?
He was wondering if I was in trouble, I'm sure, you know. And so, yeah, I get looked at, I get, you know, dirty looks from them. But I'm glad the Chief Bassett's gone, you know. I mean, I know they're all bad, but he was, you know, he was worse. So
now, why was Bassett bad? We now have, of course, Chief Belcher, Steve Belcher, who has the police force. But, and I've always felt Bassett was bad news. But tell me why you think he was bad.
Well, because I was so upset about being arrested and harassed by his henchmen. I would call them henchmen because that's the way they acted. I would call them thugs, as they called the young blacks in the ghetto, because these guys were thugs. I was threatened by some of the officers. I was arrested in about 1987 for attempted murder. I didn't even look like the guy. You know, they kept me in jail for 3 days, and when I got out, they didn't give me an apology, but the cop that arrested me said, "We'll get you for something, boy."
Who was the cop?
Connors.
Officer Connors is still on the force, folks. He's the famous motorcycle guy who voomed up to the town clock in order to seize soup in the spring of 1989. He was kind of notorious for his flamboyant style.
Yes, and he vowed to kill me. And so I went in front of and that wasn't the first incident with just him. I've been harassed many years on my bicycle, in my van. Anyway, I went eventually to see Chief Bassett. I wrote him a letter and said, "I really want to talk to you because I feel that I'm being harassed by your officers, and I'd like you to talk about it with me." So I went into his office. I felt like I probably had 20 guns pointed at me in his office, you know. I was surprised he even saw me. But I told him, and he basically said, "Oh, no, we have good cops," and he basically did what he was supposed to do, but he didn't do anything, essentially. So, but he made it so that Connors could not, well, not he did, but the courts did. Connors couldn't even come near me after a while. If he wanted to arrest me, he had to call somebody else because I spit in his face because he tried to break my arm and he threatened my life. And so the local situation, my black friends and I, we call it little apartheid. So that just tells you what me and my black friends think about Santa Cruz on the cop side, you know, on the cop side.
What's the situation? I got kind of two questions for you. One, the homelessness situation among people who are black. Is it any different from those who are white in Santa Cruz, and is it any different from other larger urban areas, A? And B, well, I mean, let's start with that.
Okay, first of all, if you're homeless in Santa Cruz, that's bad. But if you're black and homeless, you're fucked, you know? Just multiplied by 1,000, you know? If you're white and homeless, it's bad. Believe me, I know, and you got long hair. But if you're black and homeless, all I can say, you're fucked. Yeah.
Any particulars in terms of how black homeless people are treated? We, of course, Jack Light John Hamilton, who's a black activist, has been fighting homelessness for years, you know, setting up tables, getting petitions, even has a law after named after, we call it the John Hamilton, the Neil Coonerty Cafe Law, because it was designed as part of the downtown ordinances in 1994 to make sure that John did not set up his table in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz, and that that sort of special interest legislation for Neil Coonerty, owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz and at one time mayor of Santa Cruz. But what is homelessness higher among blacks proportionately in Santa Cruz? Is it a different kind of scene in terms of are black families more likely to be sympathetic to homeless black people, or is it just as bad or worse in that situation?
Personally, for myself, and I guess I can speak for myself and some of the black people that I know who have been homeless. Me, personally, being homeless, I was homeless from 1984 in Santa Cruz to about 1992. And for me, I felt that I connected with what the white street people were going through, but I felt my situation was just a little bit more stressful because, like, not only was I poor, but I was black, and I felt that, like, you know, it was like a double whammy. And the black community here is very tight-knit, but if you're not a part of it originally, I mean, if you haven't been here and they know you, then you're like just another outcast. And sure, I mean, the hippies would take me in, but, you know, even that wasn't like, you know, I didn't feel like some of them even accepted me. It's like you can't be accepted, you know, in Santa Cruz on either side. Sometimes if you're black, sometimes the wealthier blacks that live here, they, you know, they're like kissing ass to make it, and their goal in life is to be more white, you know, and which is fine, you know, I have no problem with that, be what you want, but you know, they're not supporting, some of them are not supporting you know, where they came from, you know, and a lot of them are from the roots of the black community, and they, and they come here and they forget and act like that, you know that things have changed, and yes, society pushes us to become more, you know, European-minded in order to succeed, whether it's in speech, whether it's in action, and all that means is just you just follow the rules as far as were laid down by, you know, European society, which I'm not saying is good, bad, or whatever, but you just follow those rules, and you don't, you know, because if I go around, if I speak a certain way, just to give you an example, if I say, yeah, what's up, you know, how you doing, man, you know, hey, I go into European society, I won't get the job. And I mean, that's natural, I'm not saying I would, that's extreme, but if I go, yes, excuse me, I mean, you know, hi there, my name is Sharif, and I would like a job, you know, I'm well qualified, you know, but if I have a twang and I say, yeah, if I say, I says, yes, I would like a job, it's in my dialect. See, we get faulted for dialect, and I may know what, like the difference between, in the ghetto where I'm from, people say red. They say red. And it sounds kind of a draw, like maybe from the south, but it's like red. What's up, red? You know, it's red, dead, head. And in the suburb, white suburb, they would say head, red, and dead. And I can do both. So I'm fortunate. But if you cannot speak different dialects in this society, especially as a black man, you will get left behind. So fortunately, I'm able to articulate and communicate what I feel.
So you have to be a lingual expert as well as a talented actor if you want to survive as a person with born with black skin here in this
exactly.
Even in Santa Cruz.
Even in Santa Cruz, especially in Santa Cruz, because the balance in demographics as far as black and white, I mean, the percentage of black people in Santa Cruz is probably less than 1%, if that. So you don't have, like in San Francisco or in Oakland, you don't have the camaraderie, you don't have people being exposed to different kinds of people. I mean, people say that Santa Cruz is liberal, and it is on a certain level, but I look at liberal as being inclusive, not exclusive, you know, that we include everybody. We don't neglect or leave out certain segments of the population and say, well, you know.
Or insist that they abandon their culture in order to be a part of
exactly.
The great white dream, so to speak. The final question I have for you, or of course you can say anything you want, and I encourage our listeners, phone lines are open, 427-3772, to call in, is what about the touchy issue of racism among the homeless? I mean, one of the white guys I invited in here recently turned out to be a Nazi.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and...
I got something for you.
Yeah.
Okay, check this out. I'm glad you brought that up, because some of the people out on the corners, that new hippie corner, which I don't pay any homage to. I mean, the old brothers and sisters who I've loved with, lived with, you know, cried with, and some of them have died. I will love them forever. But these new, you know, I call the old people psychedelic Americans, you know, because they're more classy than these so-called new hippies. But anyway, I was at the soup kitchen like 3 days ago, and this white guy that was in looked like, you know, him and his buddy looked like they could have been the hippies or they could have been rednecks, I don't know, you can take your pick, but they were in a hippie crowd. You know, I was standing behind him in front of one of them, and then his buddy came and rooted in front of me, and I asked him why, and then they started talking about nigger. You know, I mean, nigger, just right off the bat. And they were homeless. They were poor as I was, you know, and they were dirtier than I was for a fact. They looked like they hadn't even taken a bath in years, and yet he gonna call me a nigger. You know, and it's like, yeah, and he's like poor, you know, dirt poor, and I'm a nigger. You know, and he's at the soup kitchen getting a meal like I am. We're both equal. But to him, I was still a nigger. He was still better than me, he felt. So, yes, and some of the street people, I don't want to generalize, but some of the new, I would say, street, not the old, you know, some of the new street people, you know, they got long hair, but they just had a redneck.
Well, you know, what's the answer to this kind of thing? I mean, you know, that this is, of course, what the boys at the top want to do. They want to turn us all against each other. They want, you know, blacks and whites to fight, blacks and Latinos to fight. They want everybody to fight. But not to fight them, not to fight for fundamental change in the society so everybody can have a decent chance and get what they're entitled to. This City Hall sleepout that's going to be beginning tonight, maybe they could hold some kind, maybe, would you be willing to go and talk about racism to people on the streets who want to come to this sleepout?
Sure, I mean, if it's appropriate, you can let me know. I can come by, you can give me the information, and you can come by. My thing is this. I want to bring us together. I say, fuck them. Let's us come together. I'm about us. You know, us who are conscious, us who are visionary, us who are healers, you know. Let's come together, you know. Let your voice be heard. If you have something to offer, come and join us, you know. I'm not out pointing the finger at anybody. Every man individually, you can be my brother. I don't care who you are, what color you are. You know, I'm in the harmony. I'm a musician. Anybody knows me knows I'm a musician. And I'm open to all people. I'm not just for black people. I am for all people.
Well, that was a call from an often eloquent caller who apparently has nothing to say at the moment. Well, Sharif, I want to thank you. And again, if anybody wants to contribute to your book or has incidents of racial discrimination in Santa Cruz or ideas for racial harmony, or let's just say racial justice, how can you have harmony without justice, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And again, if you want to grab Sharif before he goes and, hey, if you want to, whatever you want to say to him, if you're one of those guys who called him a nigger, hey, call in and talk to him about it right now, and he'll tell you exactly how it feels, and he'll tell you what what's what.
You know, I know this is a touchy issue for a lot of folks, but the only way that we can deal with this issue is to talk about it, and even though it's uncomfortable, I mean, it's better to do it, to get it out in the open, and I know there are a lot of good folk who are in, who can hear my voice, and maybe it disgusts you to even hear it. Maybe you're in awe to know that these things go on, and you don't know what to say or what to think. But as long as you can just absorb it and take it in and try to just understand it a little, I feel great. So that's all I have to say for now. I'm gonna get out of here, but I hope that somebody heard it and it improved somebody's understanding of what other people who live in Santa Cruz go through, and if you have compassion, then share that also. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharif, and hopefully we'll try to dragoon you into coming over to the sleep out, at least look in on it and see what you think.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we'll do it again.
All right, and we'll hopefully be getting some updates from Sharif. And
I hope people are on the bandwagon. And
yeah. Well, we.
Thanks for inviting me, guys.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, it took a while to get Sharif in here. Naturally, if you've been hit by a brick and you're a little bit reluctant to show your head until it's healed and until you feel like you've got your shit together and can defend yourself. And that was. Sharif talked to me back in the fall, and now he's come public and spoken to all of us about the issues involved. 427-3772 is our call-in number. You are listening to Bathrobes Piers Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz, every Monday and Friday. It's Friday, and it's wake-up day, or I should say it's sleep-out night tonight at City Hall. Grab your bag, and grab your blanket, grab your bathrobe, your nightgown, and your teddy bear, and, condoms are optional, and get your butt down to City Hall to support the poorest of the poor, and those who think that there should be legal places for everyone in Santa Cruz to sleep, the sleeping ban that should be reformed, there should be emergency campgrounds, and that city council members should not be allowed to monopolize the dialogue while doing nothing, and that the monopoly service providers, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and whatever other groups are lending their support to doing nothing around the emergency shelter crisis, have got to be pulled up short by the realities of the situation here in Santa Cruz. Right before Sharif came in, we were going to be playing an interview with Bob Campbell, and that's what we're going to turn to right now. Bob was a service provider for years here in Santa Cruz. I've had problems with him. He's actually been on the air in terms of demonstrations, even against his refusal, for example, to open up a kitchen to the free meal, which was then called Calamity's Cupboard in 1990. When Bob ran the River Street mini shelter, we talked about occupying his kitchen. We walked in, we marched, and so forth. And I've had problems with Bob for being hostile to campers on the Pioneer Street property. He ran the Pioneer House, which was a program. But I've also been impressed with Bob's interest in making sure there is justice for homeless people since then. I think possibly his stint away from the bureaucracy has done him a lot of good, and I think he has got a lot of interesting things to say. So I called him up, and I believe he put his head together and helped Dan Hopkins with his appeal as well. He was involved in discussions with Dan in order to bring intelligent questions to the city council when Dan appealed the community house permits on Tuesday. Let's hear what Bob has to say.
Campbell, who now works for the University of California, but had previously in the last decade, well, last 15 years, been rather deeply involved with homeless services. How you doing, Bob?
Very good. How are you?
All right. What did you do as a homeless care provider?
Back in those days, ran the River Street Shelter and a place called Pioneer House. Served people that had the psychiatric disabilities there and who were homeless and people with substance abuse problems.
Mm-hmm. How long did you do this for?
About 5 years. And then before that, I did it, set up programs, outreach programs, and that kind of thing for the County Department of Mental Health. That was so, I guess, from about 86 to about 93.
Mm-hmm. Now, when Pioneer House still goes on, right?
Right. It's called something else now.
What do they call it?
Community Support Services, I believe. It's become more of a straight-ahead mental health program.
Indeed, there were those who said that when you left about that time, the character of the program changed from one which served the entire homeless community to that which was somewhat more restricted. What was the nature of that criticism?
When I was running the program, we had an open-door policy. Anybody that showed up essentially could walk in. They didn't have to be evaluated at the Emmeline Street complex beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And our evaluation period was pretty open. Could take up to a month to 6 weeks to really come up with some kind of determination about their eligibility for our program based on a psychiatric disability. Consequently, some people we served may not have had psychiatric disability at all, but at least had an opportunity to connect with us, get some support, and some resources maybe lined up, and then kind of move on.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it, do you think, because of financial problems that the policy changed, or did it have to do with a militant, hardline determination to serve a different population of people?
The mental health system was faced with some financial burdens. Essentially, the implementation of a managed care type of service delivery system, and more patients essentially they had enrolled in their program, better rate they would get for their services from the state through Medi-Cal, through the feds, through the state, through Medi-Cal. So it was, I think, particularly financially motivated.
So unless you meet the criterion, you don't get the bucks from the state.
Exactly.
Similar for perhaps to the kind of reasoning that's gone on around the Community House Project, which, of course, as you know, is the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Transitional Housing for 20 to 40, although they've at times said it's more. Those are the two plans that are currently being considered for $1.3 million, which has not yet all been apparently fundraised yet, but which passed the City Council in terms of its zoning permit requirements in spite of an appeal by Daniel Hopkins last Tuesday. Did you follow that?
I spent some time reading over Daniel's information and the zoning findings of the zoning board the first time around, that kind of thing. Like the zoning board dealt primarily with the zoning issue. It seems like there's two issues. First is zoning, which is probably a difficult one to win given the services that are going on around there. But the other one is just the feasibility of the project and what the actual need in the community is. Is there a need for another transition house?
Mm-hmm.
Is there more of a need for a campground? Do we have any transition houses?
Is it a right place to have a transition house?
But the city contends that there are no transition houses in the city of Santa Cruz, but you could call the River Street Shelter a transitional program if you would, and you could call the New Life Center a transition program. And then the county is helping to fund a nonprofit called Housing for Independent People that is focused on homeless people, families who are willing to sign on to try to get jobs, that kind of thing. There's a transitional housing program. I'm not exactly sure how many people they serve at this point. I think Bill Watt is the executive director of that bank, of that program.
Mm-hmm. So, in essence, although there certainly is not enough transitional housing, there's actually more transitional housing than there is emergency shelter at this point.
Right, and you know, the SRI, you know, interesting transitional housing. It's the same old issue. What about regular housing that doesn't cost anything that you can move into and stay in?
Mm-hmm.
We still haven't gotten back to the housing we lost downtown after the earthquake. You know, we're still down 50% of the affordable housing units we had downtown at that time. So, you know, I think basically, you know, the housing issue, as it relates to the homeless issue, really hasn't gotten much better.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you follow the debate around the community house permit on Tuesday night when the city council considered Hopkins' appeal?
I read the appeal beforehand. I actually didn't go to the meeting.
Actually, it's also televised for our audience. They should know that anyone who wants to observe city council meetings can do so. I think it's channel 71 or 72. You don't have to go out in the rain or deal with the city council itself, which rustles papers, reads newspapers, and makes nasty comments threatening to arrest people at the at the lectern during these hearings. That's not all they do, of course. Those are the worst aspects of it. But it can be rather tedious. But you can watch it from the comfort of your home and have popcorn and hot cocoa if you'd like, and that's on TV, I understand. Not the popcorn or the cocoa, but the city council.
So, I did attend some of the community house board meetings, and I did review their minutes of about a year's worth of their board meetings. And, other than, you know, the questionable need for a transitional housing program is questionable ability for the community house people to really pull it off in a successful way financially. That's not going to add a increased financial burden onto the city.
Now, Gerald Darling is the head of the Community House Project, and Paul Merceau, who I believe is retiring in a couple months, is currently running the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, which currently covers the winter shelter program for the Armory, which will be closing, I believe, at least on a weather, or except on a weather-related basis, on March 15th. And he also covers the Armory at the churches program, where people are taken to the floors of churches and get overnight emergency shelter there. These two men were accused by campers of violating a promise. I also accused them of violating a promise made to the campers, a witnessed oral contract, which would allow campers to use the property, which is now being used to develop community house, until 10 days after permits were granted, which theoretically means they should have had their tents up there on that property last night. City council members at the social service subcommittee on Tuesday declared that the area had been posted with signs called City and County Shelter Project Trespass, Don't Trespass Here. Interesting they call it the City County Shelter Project when it's the Citizens Committee for the Homeless property, but
I actually had those signs put in place when I was the director of Support of Outreach Services.
Right, but those signs, I think they put more of them up at levels of what, every 10 or 20 feet along the fence. That
in the back perimeter.
Right. And that apparently was in response to a flyer which I wrote, which called Jump the Fence and Pitch Your Tents, which suggested to homeless people that they own the property, or if they don't, they at least have been given a contract with those who do own the property to keep it until 10 days after permits were granted. And council members Kennedy and Rotkin sternly warned all present that there would be criminal charges leveled against anyone who had the temerity to lay down a sleeping bag on that piece of property. What's your sense about that? Do you feel that I don't think anybody has, or if they have, I'm not aware of it, done that yet. But what people instead are intending to do, I'm told, is begin a sleepout tonight at City Hall. Apparently Daniel Hopkins has taken a very militant stance, declares he will sleep out at City Hall. If he's arrested, he will return with his sleeping bag, and he will continue to do that until emergency shelter, by which he means a campground, is opened in Santa Cruz, and until the sleeping ban is rescinded, at least some combination of those two provisions. What's your reaction to that announcement by Daniel Hopkins?
Good for him. I think that people that have a commitment to make things more workable for people that live in city, county, ought to go for it. You know, I have a lot of respect for people don't have to have the same points of view as I do or do the same things that I do. Like them. They have a commitment to, and they're committed to a particular cause or belief, and they're not hurting anybody by kind of moving forward on that. I think civil disobedience is a good course of action for people.
Finally, Daniel Hopkins was praised by the entire city council and indeed by Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau for the mild-manneredness of his presentation, for the thoroughness of his analysis, even though they disagreed with him, and of course they voted him down to a line. Everything was he proposed was voted down, although initially Celia Scott suggested that Hopkins' concerns that the soil at the Community House Coral Street property was toxic and that there were noise problems that were serious were really batted about for some length of time. And initially Celia Scott asked that a soil analysis be done and that that there be noise buffering put into the trailers or significant, that there be a noise level permit requirement of some sort. That's what Jane Yokoyama said, because she recalled that when she lived in modular housing, it was really super noisy, and it would be even more noisy by the freeway, and the original community house permit had a noise requirement, and that noise requirement was for a building that was going to be built somewhat more away from the freeway and not for rather thin-walled modular housing. The original community house permit, which was issued, I guess, in 91, was for a structure that was going to be built on the property, not for modular trailers from Stanford that were going to be relocated there, which is the current situation.
Right.
And the council actually began to discuss with some concern until Mayor Rotkin announced, in what I sort of regarded as had a done-deal feel, as I put it, that would be too expensive, at which point all opposition dissolved, and instead we have Celia Scott recommending that vegetables not be grown at Community House because of the possibility of toxic soil, and that they plant little shrubs along the side of the highway that, even though they won't really reduce the sound much, and that was admitted by Cynthia Matthews and by Catherine Byers, that it certainly would be helpful in some way whatsoever, or who knows how. Any sense of any comment on that?
Well, you know, when Celia was member of the Community House Board of Directors, she requested, she had heard that there had been a negative impact on soil condition and that it was toxic, and she had called for information on that. From the follow-up minutes that I noticed, I didn't see that she got any response from her own board or her own executive director about that. So it's not surprising that she would bring it up. You know, I don't see how growing vegetables really remediates the problem of toxic soil, but, you know, maybe there's some relationship there. I'm not sure.
Well, no, not growing vegetables.
Not growing vegetables.
They would caution people not to grow vegetables.
Right. And I'm not sure quite how that takes care of toxic soil, but, you know, maybe.
It's a dirty situation, I've got to say.
So, you know, I'm not surprised. And given her, you know, environmental stand and platform, if you will, you know, it seems like issues that she would address in an open setting like that. You know, I guess her commitment to that is dependent on
whether Mike Rotkin says yes or no. Yeah, it was a sad thing. It also everybody who spoke at that city council meeting opposed the community house, other than Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau and the city council and the staff of the zoning board. And so a lot of criticism was levied at Citizens Committee for the Homeless, very specifically for its abusive process. I guess you were witness to some of that at the where they wouldn't allow me to speak, and they closed the meeting, and then the next meeting I was arrested. You were not there at that meeting. They called the police twice, threatened me with arrest, evicted me from the room. The actual formal arrest never happened, but there was a letter with you know, essentially telling me if I attended the meeting, I would be removed and arrested and so forth. So, plus, of course, there are abuses around the previous Coral Street open-air shelter and the kinds of mismanagement that happened. You had complaints about Citizens Committee for the Homeless back in 1991 when they were allowing people to camp on their property, as I recall.
It seemed unmanaged, and there was lots of threatening kinds of behavior going on there, and there was lots of disruption to the shelter residents. And, you know, I wrote the Citizens Committee on at least four occasions, and without much response, copied the city
revealed some hypocrisy on the part of the Citizens Committee at that time. You revealed a letter to the chief of police from Paul Lee and Paul Fotenhauer, I believe, maybe Fred Gray as well, who asking that all on the Citizens Committee, that individuals who were sleeping on the property be arrested for trespass, or authorizing the police to do that.
I believe that is one thing that happened. There was, you know, I think that the, my own opinion is that the city is not, well, let's see, I guess my opinion is that the Citizens Committee is torn between wanting to provide a campground and wanting to abide by the city policy of no campground in the city, and the city is stuck with this white elephant piece of land that they could never get rid of, and found the Citizens Committee willing to buy it, and you know, my own opinion, and it is completely my own opinion, is that that relationship, that purchase, worked well for the city, and I guess you know, they're invested in making it work for the Citizens Committee.
Well, we'll be hoping to see you with your sleeping bag and possibly hear your erudite tones down at the City Hall this weekend, supporting Daniel Hopkins and others, or perhaps looking in on them and seeing what's cooking. Are you going? Will you be on another skiing trip, Bob?
No, I'll be at home.
All right then. Well, I appreciate your letting us know what's happening and briefing us, and keep abreast of events for us, and let us hear from you again.
All right, I better get back to my job.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was indeed Bob Campbell in an interview this morning on the issues around Community House, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the campground, and so forth. Interesting to learn that the city was pleased to get rid of the property to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and then became indebted to them and then had to respond by essentially supporting them recently. Interesting situation. That's one angle I had not really been aware of. Last night, I went out to the Henry Cowell Campground, which is where the River Street refugees are currently roosting. And they're kind of on the move again because they... I'm not sure it's either, as I said in the beginning of the show, they don't have the money or there's a time problem. And they're going to be moving, I think, by noon today, is my understanding, unless they get some huge infusion of donations. Speaking of which, if you want to donate money to the River Street Refugees, you can contact Barbara Riverwoman at 425-5939. And in spite of all my criticism of Sherry Connable and to some extent of Barbara in terms of not making meetings with city officials open to other members of SOS and other members of the homeless activist community, I still want to commend both of them for their militant support for the River Street refugees. I think that is something that has really contributed to the maintenance of that community out there, and there's no question about that. If you want to help the River Street refugees, give a call to Barb Riverwoman at 425-5939. And if you want to contact Michael Sheridan or Daniel Hopkins, you can leave a message on my phone, 423-4833. That is also the number to call if you wish to support the present protest with money, funding, advice, prayers, you name it. Give a call if you have any ideas or suggestions. 423-HUF. HUF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. 423-HUF. 423-4833. I hope we're going to have an extra hour today, but we haven't recently. I suspect I'm going to be cut off at noon. So what I'm going to do, of course, is invite your calls, 427-3772. The lines are open. And I'm also going to play for you some conversations that happened last night at Henry Cowell, the locus of the River Street refugees, at least for another half hour until noon when they have to move on, or at least some of them said they were planning to, and maybe move right on to City Hall. Before I begin playing that, however, I'll also note that this demonstration, which is due to start the sleep out at City Hall, may troop around. It may go downtown to the merchants. It may go over to the county building. Indeed, the River Street refugees have recently been investigating abusive behaviors by the sheriff's office. Indeed, officially abusive behaviors, not just some rogue sheriff's deputies telling campers they can't sleep because there is no countywide camping ban, by the way, just a citywide ban and a ban in certain select areas in the county. But people have been informed in the county that they can't sleep, and that apparently is the official information from the official misinformation source, Sheriff, our Deputy Ross. Interesting misinformation coming out of the Sheriff's Department, which has been uncovered by the River Street refugees. So they may go to the county building and do some sleeping there. Apropos of that, well, the demonstration will start today at City Hall. If you want to go to the county supervisors and talk to them and get them off their fat, sleazy butts, or thin, shiny butts, or whatever their butts are, get them off their butts, you can go to meetings with individual supervisors on Monday. Usually it's Tuesday that the supervisors meet. In fact, it's invariably Tuesday on the fifth floor of the county building, starting about 8:30 or 9 in the morning. But you can talk to the supervisors on a more intimate basis, one-to-one, at the following locations. Jan Buttes, the first district, at 5:30 on Monday at the Cheese Factory. That's 21620 East Cliff Drive in Santa Cruz. Jan Buttes. Walter Simon, 2nd District, 9 a.m., Aptos Fire Station, 6934 Soquel Drive in Aptos. You can talk to our very own Marty Wormhout, 3rd District, 5 p.m. at the Food Court, right across from Hippie Corner. That's 5 p.m. on Monday at 1110 Pacific in Santa Cruz. You can talk to Fred Keeley of the 5th District at Coffeetopia at 13266B Highway 9 in Boulder Creek. And if you're really interested in that, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll repeat all those times and places, or you can look at page 4 of today's Santa Cruz Urinal, which is my way of saying you can look in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. I tend to try to give credit to the urinal for its yellow journalism. All right, let's turn now to interview last night with River Street refugees and the upcoming Dan Hopkins sleepout.
It's about 9:30 here at the Henry Cowell Park. I'm surrounded by homeless campers. I feel fairly safe, but I'm not sure. At any time, I could be held for ransom. But until that time, I'm here with Michael Sheridan, who has recently been drawing attention to the Pottinger decision. Now, Michael, what's the significance of the Pottinger decision, in your opinion?
The significance is we have a dog named Spike who is now being held on death row in the SPCA, and we have until Saturday to get him out, or they might kill him, and they want $62.50. He was a River Street refugee, and his human was a junkie dog, right, who since has gone to prison, and he passed him on to another person who was a drunk, and that drunk passed him on to another drunk, and that drunk let it go, and we're trying to save Spike's life.
What does this have to do with the Pottinger decision, if you don't mind my asking, Mr. Sheridan?
It has to do that we're put into cruel and inhumane conditions, and we're denied a legal place to live, and therefore, you know, we're unable to take care of people like Spike, who are better than humans.
I see. So this is sort of a...
wind up in death row here in Santa Cruz County, and there's people out there at the SPCA with guns. You know, if we try to go in there and rescue Spike and save him from castration or death, you know, we could get in a lot of trouble. We're risking our lives. We have no... And this all comes from not having a legal safe place to sleep and take care of dear Spike.
Save Spike and give these campers a legal place to sleep. Let's tune in on some of this conversation that's going on here. There's some bread cooking over the fire.
To facilitate a search for these records, and that also that it was a privacy act, and that we, since these were criminal charges, that we would...
And what's being discussed here is the investigation by the River Street refugees into a series of illegal tickets being given by county sheriffs to campers throughout the county, who are telling the campers that there is a camping law which makes it illegal for them to sleep or camp, which of course is not true. There's only a countywide camping, there's no countywide camping ban. There is a ban in a very few areas, including Paso Tiempo and Tanner Heights, Ocean Street Extension, which was initiated after some public hearings. in the 80s. So the Sheriff's Department is lying to the poor population of Santa Cruz County, and the River Street Refugee investigators are trying to acquire documentation, and they're being told that the Privacy Act prevents them from getting that information, very conveniently for the Sheriff's Department, which has been, shall we say, abusing poor people by misinforming them, ticketing them, harassing them, and I presume in some cases jailing them.
Not allowed to see them.
No, class action.
Now, what's being discussed here is the attempt of the River Street refugees to determine what kind of shenanigans the Sheriff's Department has been doing in falsely charging people with camping crimes in the county, because as most people don't know, camping is not illegal in the county, but only in certain very certain specified areas of the county, which are rather limited. They wanted to check out the records of camping tickets given out, and apparently they were unable to find them. Sheriff blocked them from finding them.
Down below into the tombs, down into the down into traffic court, basically.
And
traffic court said that they also didn't have the records.
You get it from Discovery or from the people who get.
You're not listening to me. Because I already told you that we already thought of that. Okay. That is the most common sense.
What is it? What did you know? What am I saying?
Well, I said, okay, so that's something that we already thought about. You know, that is the most commonsensical idea.
You don't get the people from the sheriff.
I realize that.
Instigate the suit and subpoena the record.
Right. Defend it. But you have to have.
They have to give them to you. If you file a suit and you have discovery, they have to. The city, anybody. It's like they have to give you all the records of discovery.
Right. So. The campers are seeking in different ways to determine the extent of deputy malfeasance in citing people for camping who under non-existent camping laws, as the sheriffs have been doing for a decade. We know this. If not citing people, they've been harassing people, and that, of course, has to stop. But what I'm interested in learning is how the camp feels about the proposed demonstration tomorrow downtown, a sleepout at City Hall. Any thoughts on that one, Corey?
Excuse me, you caught me in the middle of a mouthful of wonderful leftover rice.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is that it's going to be kind of a wake-up call. We are not going to sit back and take this and just roll over and be quiet. We're going to fight for what is morally ours, namely the use of our land. That's my message. Actually, I would have more to say, but my speechwriter is Arlo Guthrie, and I can't get in touch with him right now.
I see.
He said it very eloquently when he said, "This land is your land. Mm-hmm. This land is my land."
This city hall is our city hall.
Should be.
Why not use it for shelter if these clowns can't find anywhere else, right? Any comments on tomorrow's demonstration?
It's a tradition, you know. You could be shown to have plotted against the government.
And that is from the anonymous seditionist Rolling Thunder Michael. Speak into the mic.
Santa Cruz 12 will be famous.
And that voice, folks, is the voice of Richard Q, who 7 years ago, actually no, almost 8 years ago, was the first individual caught sleeping on a bench outside of City Hall in the summer of 88 when homeless people began massive demonstrations against the sleeping ban. Is this not in fact true, sir?
Yes, it is. Yes,
and,
it is.
And you were telling me earlier what happened that evening.
I was told it was going to be a sleep-in, so I went there with my blanket, and nobody was sleeping in. So I just saw the bench, and I went over and laid down, and then a policeman came over and said, wait until after the city council meeting's over with. And I said, no, thank you, I'm tired now. And I pulled the cover over my head and went to sleep. Whoa. And then I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and looked around and there was nobody else there, so I decided to I thought the demonstration must be over, so I went back to my my bus and got warm, and that's about it.
Now, here's a man who sacrificed warmth in his bus in order to be in solidarity with his fellow homeless people.
Yay!
Yes, sir, Richard.
And
I'm not trying to change them. I'm just keeping them from changing me.
Well, but all right. And, of course, you are immortalized in Street Shit Sheet number 5, I believe it was, those days. We've reached Street Shit Sheet 151 now, but in those days we were in the early days of the Street Shit Sheet. Well, now here's another couple that seems to be sitting around the fire, and they have their own free radio.